We're wrapping up the first day of CodeCon. We had a little different format this year. We decided to do one panel, largely because we did three last year, but that had to do largely with the number of submissions we got this year. It was overwhelming. We had to turn down a lot of really, really good talks, which was harder than trying to find people to submit. If I could do it, I'd have a week-long conference and put all the good talks up, but I can't. So we bumped two panels. We decided we'd just do one. We hope this one's very good. It's a panel discussing future directions in version control. We have Greg Stein from Subversion, Jonathan Shapiro from OpenCM, and Larry McVoy from BitKeeper. Would you guys introduce yourselves until when you give your talk?
They're going to talk to Shapiro. I stole the stage.
And we have Rodney Thayer doing moderation. They're going to present.
He told me he wanted me to stand up routines, but, you know, I had to do this instead. Len gets derailed.
They're going to present for 10 minutes on their projects and then open up the panel discussion, and then we'll open up to Q&A. Okay. Over to you, Rodney.
All right. So the format here is we're going to have each one of them give a little, I don't know, description, theological statement, whatever you feel is appropriate. And we'll arbitrarily do it furthest from me first, since you guys randomly sat down. That seems like as good a random number source as any other. 10 minutes each. I'll keep track of the time, and then we want to do, like, you know, talk among us, and then we'll do Q&A after that. So, and I'll hand off the microphone.
So, I'm Larry McVoy. I founded a small company that does source management stuff. We produce a product called BitKeeper. We've been around for about 6 years, actually. Probably the only reason you would have ever heard of us is that the Linux kernel guys use our stuff, and actually we just passed about a one-year anniversary of them using it. Do you guys care about numbers? I'm a numbers guy. You want to know about statistics, that kind of crap, or? Yeah. Okay. All right. This is the only thing that I'm not making up. Everything else is. Yeah, whatever. So in the last year, there's been, in BitKeeper for the Linux kernel, there's been 18,500 plus commits, over 15,000 files, in about 136,000 deltas. The BitKeeper repository for that takes up about 128 megabytes for the revision history. The checked out files are 213 megabytes. Let me say that again because that should register. We got a year's worth of work, 136,000 deltas, in less space than the checked out files. About half. That's pretty good. Checkout time on a really nice fast machine is 15 seconds for the whole tree. We also have a hosting service that we use for the source for BitKeeper just because people needed a place to put it. It's called BKBits. There's about 250 branches of the Linux kernel tree on there spread out over a little under 4 million files. It's got about 3,000 users. Somebody synchronizes with BKBits every 19 seconds, 24/7. It's been synchronized with from almost every continent. I think we finally got one of the Arctics, but we don't have both of them. And pretty much every country, Russia, Pakistan, you know, you name it.
What?
Yeah. So away we go. The Linux kernel is, there's lots of stuff going on. At any rate, so that's what we do. We built a distributed source management system largely because we wanted to help Linus, and it took much longer than we thought it was going to take, and we ended up making a company out of it. We're profitable and growing and yada, yada, yada. So that's about it.
Cool. So let's see. I don't know a lot of you. I'm Jonathan Shapiro, and I sort of got sucked into configuration management somewhat against my will. My primary work has been on secure operating systems and long before that on development tools. And we got into configuration management because we're building a high assurance operating system. There are security and traceability requirements that come out of the high assurance end of the spectrum that existing tools don't meet, and you know, like a lot of you, CVS is an 85% solution. The patch is the other 15%. And I suppose, actually, I should give some credit to Larry a bit for getting OpenCM started. I'm sure this will surprise the hell out of him. But early on, I got a piece of really good advice. Early on, I got a really, really accurate piece of advice from Larry, and I won't capture your words because it was too long ago, but the sense of it was, you're a moron, don't build another configuration management system.
Yeah, this is CodeCon, this is not WWF. CodeCon, this is not WWF.
This is a lot harder than you think it is. And Larry was absolutely right. Larry was absolutely right, and it's taken us 2 years longer than we initially anticipated. That said, we've been eating our own dog food for over a year. We run the Eros project out of OpenCM. We run OpenCM itself out of OpenCM. Todd Fries has been maintaining a parallel OpenBSD commit tree in OpenCM. And we've been learning a lot. We've had some early schema errors, which is why we're not out of alpha yet. But the thing's stable. It works. I don't know that our repository is as clean as the BitKeeper one in terms of size. On the other hand, it was designed to be simple so we could get schema issues right. We haven't looked at the repository yet. Good news for CVS users. What's different about this thing? Well, first we do first-class configurations, although I think everybody up here could say that. I think sort of what's novel is that we've got everything cryptographically checked end-to-end. So if any alteration is made in the repository, either through malice or error, we'll catch it immediately, and in many cases we're actually able to recover from it. Because this is all sort of built into the storage architecture. It's not really something about the CM system. Any archival application could use this storage architecture. As a result of that, we get a degree of traceability and reproducibility that's easy to allege, but actually very hard to check. It's clear that in all of these systems, you can come back a year later and check out, you know, the state of the system as of midnight today, if you were a year from now. What's not clear is that you could prove to anybody that you actually had the state of the system today. And that's the kind of thing we've got to be able to do for high assurance purposes. And the only way that we know of to do this today is with cryptographic techniques, so that's what we're using. So I guess that's sort of a quick summary of where we are and why we are. We built it because we thought we needed it, and because at the time we started, Subversion was still pretty much in design discussions. I think I vaguely remember being kicked off the Subversion list because I was trying to be invasively helpful. And they were right to kick me off. You told me to shut up. And you were right.
Damn microphones.
And we're
supposed to use the mics because they're recording and all this, so I'm going to hand Greg the other.
And BitKeeper at the time was still early, and our initial assessment was that it wasn't going to meet the needs that we had, so we sort of were left with no choice but building our own. And with the benefit of hindsight, it's not clear to me that I would do it again. And Greg might second that too. I think we have something good. I am hopeful that Subversion and OpenCM will steal features back and forth over time. And in due course, I think you won't see three CM systems. I think you'll see two, because I think Larry's likely to move into areas that OpenCM and we'll speak to Subversion, but I suspect Subversion can't touch. And I think we'll see cross-fertilization between Subversion and OpenCM, and, you know, something that's sort of good enough for everybody will emerge. And that's fine. I mean, that's, in this world, that's a win. So that's what I have to say.
So the Subversion project probably started maybe 3.5 years ago with a design document by a guy named Jim Blandy, who was he works on GDB and GNU Emacs and stuff like that, but he was also sort of, you know, this is what we really want a version control system to be. And Carl Fogel, one of the CVS engineers, was sort of working on him with that design document. But about 3 years ago, right around now, Collabnet, the company that I work for, really wanted to kick off a new version control system to replace CVS. And so I got involved from the networking aspect on that Subversion uses WebDev for the network protocol, and I was very much into the WebDev space, and so I was brought in and started working on that. So Subversion was really sort of started CVS replacement. Do CVS right. Don't try and patch it. Don't try and fix it, because if you've ever actually tried that, you find it doesn't work. CVS is highly, highly resistant to being fixed. So
that would be a load of hell.
So, yeah, we started on a new version control system from scratch, and this was work sponsored by CollabNet. It is an open source project, and I think it was about 2 years ago, I wasn't working for CollabNet. I was just kind of, you know, doing some part-time stuff, and I was seeing, wow, you know, we'll get this alpha out really soon, and this was around the Linux Kernel Summit, and Larry goes, yeah, not a chance in the world. A version control system takes 3 years to develop. And I was like, no way. I don't see it. We'll have something out in just a few months. Well, okay. After 3 years, we are finally approaching our 1.0. So
I responded to Larry in almost exactly the same way. So
yeah, so the one thing to say is listen to Larry when he tells you how long a project is going to take. So, yeah, we are... basically, we've got the system built. We declared an alpha last July. And in our sense, what alpha means is that all the features are done. Everything that you need for your day-to-day operation was completed last July. We actually started self-hosting, though, about a year and a half ago. So we've been working on it for, you know, probably 10 months, even before we had all the features that any sane person would want. When we first checked the version into itself, we couldn't actually get a log out of it. We didn't have any history. We had to go to the mailing list to look up the commit history. But then we started adding all the stuff. And so some of the things that Subversion has to sort of improve over CVS is you can delete directories. You can move files. You can copy files. And all the history is retained when you do that. So we hit the alpha. We've got all the features. We've been doing little features. We've been doing mostly bug fixes, doing some performance and scalability work. We should be hitting beta within the next couple months for real this time. And I think a 1.0 probably sometime June to August, somewhere in there. It really kind of depends on how quickly we see bug reports coming in. We've been kind of floating around with our fix rate matching the find rate, but I think that's going to start trailing down over the next couple months. So it is robust. We haven't had a data loss yet, which is quite nice. And it really is a nice drop-in replacement for CVS. Unlike some of the other systems, I'm not familiar with this, and I'm not familiar with OpenCM, but at least BitKeeper, the working model for BitKeeper is very, very different because it attempts to solve a different problem. Subversion is just like CVS. You check out a working copy, you make edits, you merge changes, and you commit back. Same system.
Okay.
John said OpenCM is really sort of the same working model as CVS. So I think that's about it.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys that I'll work on. So I'm starting a new project, Cryptographic Toolkit, which I happen to actually be starting. Well, the world needs another one, but that's a separate panel. So at fresh start, I don't have to worry about migrating existing trees from SCCS or RCS or CVS or diskette backups or whatever disgusting thing I used to do. So why would I use which one of these systems? Why would I use the system that you've been working on and what makes it better than CVS? Better than CVS, I guess, is the basic question. Although I think CVS sucks. I'd rather use RCS, but that's not the point.
Well, at least for Subversion, I think we've got all the features that you're going to need. You can move compared to CVS at least. Like I say, you can move files around, retaining the history. We have a very simple branching and tagging metaphor, which is actually the answer is we don't have it. We have cheap copies. So when you want to branch or when you want to tag, you just make a cheap copy, which is an order one operation. So and then we've got some merge facilities. However, our merge definitely is not the same as BitKeeper's. If you've got a lot of patches coming in, a lot of contributions from the community, something like BitKeeper is going to be better than Subversion. Subversion is really kind of a central server type approach with a dedicated set of committers.
So are you saying that large number of contributors and a high rate of change are kinds of things that features that you feel are important? Like, the, what did you say, 180,000 commits to the kernel or something in a year? Some rude number, whatever.
For Subversion, all of those people In the subversion model, dealing
with that model is
committers.
The thing is an important thing. You're saying.
It depends on your project. If your project is going to be a lot of people sending in patches but only a few committers, then something like BitKeeper is good because it deals with essentially patch management very well. Subversion is more where all the people that are generating stuff have commit access and there's fewer patches coming in.
So I think in answering the question, we should distinguish between things that sort of come out from any system that has proper configurations, and all these systems do. And some of the things you've mentioned, I think, are basically you've got configurations. You get a lot of this right because merges become possible. Do people here know what a configuration is? So in CVS, when you do a check-in, what CVS gets is a bunch of files that were individually checked in. And if you're lucky enough to remember the right magic, you can actually tag them so you can mostly get those versions back, the operative word being mostly. In OpenCM, in Subversion, I suspect in BitKeeper, although I haven't used it, when you do a commit, you're actually committing a set of things, and that commit occurs as an atomic action. So there's exactly one thing you can point to and say, that is the entire set of stuff. And when you go to get it back, there's one thing you can go to and say, that's the set I need back. And you've got sort of a, assuming you did your commits correctly, you get a consistent cut of the software system. And among the things you get out if you have an architecture that does configurations is you get things like rename right, because in order to do configurations, one of the things you have to store is a binding from file names to object names in the repository, and that binding is where the rename happens. It sort of falls out. You get merges back because you can actually find the ancestors because the repository actually knows what the ancestors are. There are different merge systems and they work in different ways, but that's some variant in that problem is a problem in all of them. So a lot of this stuff sort of comes out of the differences in the architectures. With respect to things that are specific to OpenCM, I think let me sort of step back and tell you the usage scenario that setting aside the security issues that drove us to build OpenCM. So sort of a day in the life of SHAP is that I get a call from some nefarious person named Laurie in this case, asking me to show up on a panel on the other side of the country. This is actually a wonderful thing. I enjoy doing panels. It's fun to talk to you. But the best part of it is that I get to spend 8 hours on an airplane. And the nice thing about 8 hours on an airplane is there are no phones, there are no students, there are no managers, there are no interrupts aside from the very talkative, loquacious person who's sat
people
next
would
to
debate
me.
That 8 hours on an airplane is a good feature and that any source code control system should give you this.
The source code control system should give
you 8 hours on
an airplane?
Should make this a pleasant thing. I mean, that's kind of a bizarre feature set.
This is flow time, for those of you who haven't noticed. The problem is that, Larry writes all of his code perfectly, but I make mistakes.
Some of us write code perfectly, too.
And so, you know, I want to be able to commit on the airplane, okay? I want to be able to undo. I didn't have a repository with me when I got on the airplane because Ben was gracious enough to tell me 3 months in advance, but DARPA calls me on 24 hours notice. So I don't always know when I'm going to be traveling. And you basically want to be able to sort of get this right without having to do prior planning for it. What you really sort of want to be able to do, given that you don't have a wire, you don't have a connection, and you're not willing to pay $3 a minute, is you want to be able to, after the fact, say, hey, I've got a working set. Let me commit it to a local repository. I'll start a branch. Right, that's got to be really lightweight. Then you want to be able to work on it. And when it's all over and you get back to, God help us, Baltimore in my case, you want to be able to do the merge to sort of get that result back into the tree. In the process of all this, you want to maintain the integrity of all of what you're doing, and you want to get all the cryptographic trail in our case so that you really know what happens. And that's sort of what prompted us to build this thing. And I think that it's hard to know how to choose between Subversion and OpenCM because I don't know enough about Subversion. I mean, the case for BitKeeper is clear. It's the most mature of the systems. And if you're doing serious production stuff, frankly, today, you'd be a moron to put it in OpenCM. 4 months from now, the answer to that might be quite different. We've been eating our dog food, but we're not yet at the point where we want to.
That's why you're barking.
Eat our dog food. So, sorry?
So the question was, starting a fresh tree, fresh development, no requirement for legacy, anything. How do I figure out what tool to use, system to use? I consider tool a good word. I don't mean it to be diminutive.
Are we discussing the size of my tool?
I was giving you the opportunity for this. You stepped in it, made the click happen. I just gave you the chance.
So, I've actually been through this.
How many lines in your tool? Your size does matter. Is this the thing? 18,000 commits. Do you really want to touch a system that has 18,000 commits in it?
But it's small. So we get this kind of crap all the time of you know, why should we use your system, da da da. First of all, we're mostly a commercial company. We have a split licensing model.
So I'm a crass capitalist. You know, you give me a good reason to go tell my boss to write a check, and I'll write a check. It's okay.
Okay.
Not a consideration in the question I meant, the way I meant it. You know, when we get to the audience questions, you can decide that, you know, commercial source is evil and you only have to do open source or whatever the heck you want to do.
Okay. So the things that we typically run through to find out, because we have to do this all the time, where we send people someplace else because they're not a match, right? They're not going to pay our prices. And we typically send people either to CVS, Perforce, or ClearCase. And those are sort of like free entry-level bells and whistles, right? And basically we always tell people, go to CVS. If CVS never hurts, then you made the right choice. Right? Because we used to try and tell you, oh, well, BitKeeper does this, and it does that, and it'll make you feel good, and your wife will love you, and blah, 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 and you know, everybody.
I think that's up there with the 8 hours in the airplane comment.
Yeah, and they all just said, yeah. I realized you can't sell these sorts of tools. Selling doesn't work. The only way you sell is you say, do you feel any pain? If they say no, then you say, use CVS. Right? And you wait until they feel some pain, and then they say, okay, so tell me about your pain. Because we're kind of Novocaine for source management, right?
The second quote of the panel.
But I tell you, you ever have to start selling this stuff, this is what works. Because they just, nobody wants to be sold on this stuff. So
what he doesn't really know is that trained dogs like me end up on the other side of the table having to ask these people questions. So.
Yeah. So the things that people, that when we do make a sale or we do get people who are using the stuff, if they're widely distributed, geographically distributed, our system's peer-to-peer. Right? So in CVS or Subversion, if you have a server and you have a workspace and somebody else has a workspace, really the only way using the tool to communicate between those two workspaces is to go through the server. You got to commit up and then the other guy's got to pull it down. BitKeeper doesn't work that way. It's got local revision history. So you commit locally and you can pull sideways, or you can build an arbitrary hierarchy of repositories. And this is how people do workflow, right? You know, that's the integration repository, that's the test repository, yada, yada, yada. And work tends to flow through. So people who have that sort of problem, merging, one of the interesting things is in the open source world, we don't see a lot of merge conflicts, right? You guys all understand what a merge conflict is. You change the file, I change the file, we banged into each other, right? And when you have a lot of those, life really sucks. And our technology auto-merges twice as much as anybody else. And you can go measure it for yourself. And it's pretty good. But for the open source community, nobody gives a damn. Because they typically, you know, there's one guy who is working on this part of the tree and another guy who's working on this part of the tree. They don't really care about that. Merging, renames, geographically distributed. We have a very nice tool that allows you, we call this the Who Screwed Me tool, right? So you can be looking at an annotated listing in our graphical pools. You double-click on any line, and you are looking at the patch. You are looking at all the other lines that changed in all the other files in milliseconds. And this is, we actually quantified for a customer how much this helps our company in order for us to fix bugs at the same rate that we fix them. Give you the same bug fix rate and the same bug fix latency. We would have to triple our engineering team without that one feature. Right? So for a lot of people, they don't really care about really short latency, right? We were giving this stuff to Linus and we were giving it to, you know, Fortune 50 companies. If we broke, we wanted to be able to fix it like right now. And that's a really big deal. But on the other hand, if, you know, right now is tomorrow or next week, yeah, that feature's not that important. You're not going to pay money for it. Good enough?
It'll do. Let's see. Yeah, you want another?
John mentioned the disconnected operation. Subversion, unlike the other two, does not have a local repository. So if you actually do need to perform a commit, you must be connected. However, Subversion is much better than, say, CVS in this regard, in that you can do adds and deletes and diffs all offline. So you can do a lot of work on the airplane, review your changes using the diff, but you can't actually make sort of multiple commits. Just wanted to clarify.
So actually, one of the things that...
Reboot the microphone is the really interesting problem.
One of the things we got paid a lot of attention to in OpenCM is how projects form. One of the places that people go wrong in any kind of management system, in any kind of case tool, is they tie themselves to their local login infrastructure. And the problem with the local, and there's nothing wrong with the local login infrastructure, except that it's tied to the corporate hierarchy, right? You go to some administrator who gives you a login whose authority sort of ultimately comes through the corporate structure. Now, in our case, we were interested in open source projects as a particular target of opportunity, and open source projects don't work that way. You form a working team that spans a whole bunch of companies, and one of the questions is, who assigns logins on the repository machine? Right? How do logins work? Right? You do all of that with cryptographic authentication. So, for example, in the case of Hopkins, we can provide access to the repository to somebody who works for IBM. We do not have to give them a login on the machine. Right? They don't have to give us a login on the machine. And it's possible even for them to take a branch, work on something privately for 6 months, not tell anybody, and then publish it post hoc and actually get the merges right. I think probably a bunch of these systems could do the merge part, but the login part's actually really easy to get wrong. And I don't know what you guys are doing for that. What are you guys doing for login? Right, so I have to have
that's really
password and an account on your machine in order to use SSH. Right, but SSH won't authenticate me unless I've got a login.
Actually, you don't need a login. There needs to be a login, right? So, for instance, for the PowerPC tree, which was the first tree on BK Bits, there is a way you get a project there, and anybody who wants write access, gives the administrator of that project their SSH key. They shove it into the project, and, you know, so there's like a half a dozen or a dozen people that all have SSH access to that box.
How do you handle traceability and how do you handle revocation?
So traceability is we don't do work on the server, right? So the server is just a cache of a repository. So when somebody does a commit, they commit to their local repository. That all that stuff is recorded. When they push, and there's logging as to who pushed. So there we know that the guy who pushes in can't be somebody other than this SSH key. We're as secure or insecure as your SSH keys, right?
Subversion actually has three separate possibilities for accessing the repository. One is local over your local file system, much like CVS when you just commit straight into the commit tree. The second one is tunneled. You can tunnel through SSH or things like that. Again, one of the standard operations for CVS, kind of like the colon EXT that you see with CVS. Our network-based, we also have that same tunneling can actually use a TCP connection rather than being tunneled. But that's a custom protocol that gets tunneled or passes over that pipe. We also use HTTP and WebDAV as sort of our primary network protocol. And so our network server is actually Apache, and Subversion is a plugin to the WebDAV module in Apache. And so our security is SSL. We can use either, you know, any kind of authentication via SSL, including client-side certificates, if you want that real strong authentication for who is performing this commit. And then, of course, you have all of Apache's access controls for being able to commit to the resources or, you know, even be able to read.
We're going to switch to questions from the floor in a few minutes, so hold your question.
One of the things about using Apache as the network server and HTTP and all of this is you definitely do not require system accounts. You can just have a MySQL table, if you want, of usernames and passwords for people to connect.
So it sounds like you guys are looking at different kinds of topologies of projects, if you will. You get the herd or horde or team or whatever you want to call the Linux kernel.
The unwashed masses.
Yeah, I spent 6 months a couple of weeks ago trying to deal with the fact that I needed three cascade patches to convince bridging to work with wireless, to work with prime number Tuesdays and Ethernet cards or something.
I don't do kernels anymore.
To deal with. None of which was checked in, of course. And the answer on the mailing list about what to do is get a life, go to 225. Well, that's not a real answer in the real world, and no source code control system is going to help you with that. But that's kind of the thing is, these are all nice tools, but, they don't change the way people write code. There's an argument that says if you have two people touching the same file, that's called a management bug. That's not called an opportunity for a tool to do auto merge. So, like, I'm glad you guys can do that, but how do we get there? How do we get there? How would you answer that?
I'd love to answer that. Virtually 100% of our customers fit the model that it's very typical. In a 60-person engineering team, we will have 40 people that are beating the shit out of the same file. And merging is critical.
I would contend that that's bad management.
Actually, they tend to... It's been very interesting watching the open source guys use BitKeeper and commercial people use BitKeeper. They work very differently. It is just very different. And it sort of explains why CVS is so popular and why you guys all use it, right? If you use anything, you probably use CVS, and you probably will for the next 20 years, because it's for the open source development model, it works fine. Hey man, it's been around 15 or 20 already. Right?
20 years we'll all be writing one line scripts in ML, I know.
Yeah, and it'll be great, man. Here, smoke this. So, in the commercial space, it is frequent that it's not a management problem, it is parallelism, right? I don't know how to make this clear. So, in Microsoft Word, it's almost impossible to have parallel development in a Word doc, right? You guys all understand this problem, right? And could you imagine developing any sort of major piece of code where, the only way to work on it was, well, okay, I own the code now, I have the rubber chicken, nobody else can do any check-ins. That's sort of the Microsoft Word model, right? Well, in the commercial world, people tend to need to move really fast. And they actually, in certain situations, move much, much faster than the open source guys. In other ways, the open source guys move faster. But it is very different, right? So it just depends on the tool. If you're going after the open source development model, yeah, you're probably right. You're not going to have a lot of people banging on the same file.
I don't know any commercial programmers who can say to their boss, gee, I don't know why there's a bug there. It did auto merge. Maybe it's somebody else's change.
Run that by me again.
So I change a file. There's a bug. It's a P1 bug, I've got three managers and a VP standing my cube telling me that I need to fix the system by the end of the day because they're doing a presentation for the Bank of the Left Half of the Universe tomorrow. And, I go, well, gee, 40 people were touching the file. It must have been the auto merge.
So
we never know that to be a valid excuse.
We actually had that situation with one of our early customers. And what they did, it's a funny story because it's a true story, too. It's cool and it's true. They were going for another round of funding, almost $100 million round of funding, and they're an IO company, they build a storage box, and they had introduced a data corruption bug into their tree, right? And they wanted to demo the tree that had the data corruption bug because it had features that they wanted to demo to get their money, right? But they were gambling, right? The VPs are sitting there going, well, if we have data corruption in the middle of this crap, this is going to be really bad. It's going to be hard for us to look good if we corrupt data during the
No, crisis. No, that's encryption. You just explain it away.
Yeah. Right? On the other hand, if we go back, then we don't have the features we want to demo, which is part of how we're getting our money. So what they did, because BitKeeper saves every single snapshot of everybody's tree and never loses any data, they just did binary search over all the change sets, and they found it in a couple hours. And got their money. Right? So it's, if you have something that saves configurations and really gives you reproducibility, you no longer really worry about, the auto merge did this, because it's sort of like, really? Well, let's go before the auto merge and have a look and see if the bug was still there. That's trivial.
So we're going to take this down to the floor. And I'm not going to do the Phil Donahue thing. We're going to find somebody.
Take this down to the floor.
I think Ray had a question. Go ahead.
Well, you want to answer the question that's pending, or do you want to switch gears?
I was going to let him have the mic, but if you have something to say, go ahead.
First, Larry's right about commercial products and commercial software development. Think header files, right? How often have you changed a header file and somebody else changes a header file, right, and the header file gets mung? Just multiply that out by 100,000 developers if you're like Boeing. It's a hard management problem. The one thing I would say about OpenCM here that may be a little different from other objectives is one of the things you see in CVS, people are using things like CVSoup, however you pronounce that, and various other tools to essentially do read-only repository replication. What they get is inconsistent read-only replicates. But aside from that, what they're really doing is using the CVS sort of as a transport infrastructure for software distribution. So one of the things we were interested in focusing on replication is actually sort of making it explicitly possible to do that kind of downstream replication for software distribution, and nonetheless know that you got a consistent cut, not necessarily the most recent consistent cut, but the most recent consistent cut that was available at the time of replication.
Subversion, again, it doesn't have multiple repositories like the other two, so don't really have much to add there.
I am kind of the desperate CVS user, okay? I use CVS. I think I fit Larry's example of not a lot of users, not a lot of committers. CVS generally works. I get bitten by it. But not every day. It's not killing me. So I want to switch to a better system, and at this point, I'm not really able to justify switching yet. So my question is to Greg. My concern about switching to Subversion is that I'm worried about inheriting all of the defects in the infrastructure that it's built in. I know that the World Wide Web Consortium is perfect and they make perfect specs, but just in the off chance that there are some flaws in there, you know, I'm really worrying about inheriting that. So the specific question is, how many people eating the Subversion dog food are using client certificates?
I can tell you zero people are using the client certificates because the code is still being written right now. So generally what people
are... So you're pre-announcing a feature, so you two are acting like a vendor.
What people are doing is basic authentication via SSL. So the SSL gives them the encryption, then they use a simple user password inside of there to do the authentication. When you were talking about sort of inheriting these bad things, which bad things? Like vulnerabilities in the server or problems in the authentication infrastructure or?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of the above?
I can certainly address both of those. When it comes to sort of the authentication infrastructure, you compare it to something like CVS. CVS sort of makes up its own, and you just kind of deal with that, or you tunnel via SSH. And so typically what you see in the open source world is people using the SSH infrastructure for strong authentication. In the Subversion model, we're moving to using the web's SSL infrastructure for strong authentication. As far as, like, you know, network server vulnerabilities, I feel much, much better about relying on Apache than if we had written our own. If we had gone and written a new network server, one, we wouldn't have any of Apache's scalability or network performance or any of those things, but we'd also have a whole new server that would need to be audited. As it is right now, we sit behind Apache, and it deals with a lot of the front-line issues, we're sort of two steps removed before Subversion actually even sees any of the request stuff. So I feel good there.
Hi. I have kind of a two-part question. The first one is, it seems like that CVS has sort of been the default source control, version control system for open source stuff for a really long time.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So
and And I was sort of surprised to hear that it's a hard problem to solve, because you said it was like a 3-year type thing. And maybe it's just, you know, like I kind of think, well, this can't be a really hard problem. Why isn't there something better? But apparently it is a really hard problem. So, and that's cool. You know, I'm glad somebody's working on it. I'm glad that a lot of people are working on it now.
The basic version control actions are quite simple. Edge cases kick the hell out of you. It really, I mean, when you start talking about, you know, merging changes as they come down, when people are adding and removing files, and how do you interact with, you know, what they've made for local changes versus what's on the server. It's easy after you spend years dealing with them.
Okay, that's my naivete on that one.
So following up on that, so Larry mentioned that they see what, a commit every 19 seconds? Is that what you said?
Synchronized
every 19 seconds. Okay. So we have sort of a kind of a related metric, which is recently we've been wrestling with some DNS issues that had nothing to do with OpenCM. Every time OpenCM becomes inaccessible for some reason of fault in the network, we get email within 45 seconds. Okay? And
Another
one to think, right, so people are really paying attention. And another thing to think about is, suppose you're Larry, right? Think about being an early Christian is you get the best lions. Okay? You get the best, you get the best lions. Okay? The Christians and the lions, right? The early Christians get the best lions. So, imagine you're Larry and you've built BitKeeper and you've done a really good job and a really good product and you manage to slip just one data corruption bug into the Linux tree. Okay? Now, how many hundred thousand people do you think are going to find your home phone number? Think about it, right? I mean, that's part of why this stuff is hard. In some of the boundary cases, and
that,
it has got to be right.
That wasn't actually my question, but, I mean, thank you for addressing that. The question is, we've been using CVS forever, and it seems like in the last year and a half, all of a sudden there's all of these other new systems that we have to think about, and it would be great to use something better than CVS, like Arch or Open, you know, one of these other ones. And I wonder, is this all driven by the fact that the Linux kernel developers have chosen BitKeeper? And does this make everybody so mad that now we're all running out to solve this problem? And the other thing is, how much money have you, as BitKeeper, made from the Linux kernel?
They're all independently wealthy. That's why they're sitting up here. We don't really need to talk about money stuff, but. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's kind of it's vaguely relevant, but it's kind of not relevant to, you know, the thing here, I think.
Let me see if I can parrot back the question.
He doesn't look like he's driving a Ferrari.
Hey, man, my Volkswagen van can take out Ferrari. Really?
But was
so
the code in
the
Ferrari
the
built with it?
Your question was basically, you know, man, it's been CVS forever, and all of a sudden I got all these choices. What should I do? And is this all because people are pissed because BitKeeper isn't free? Is that correct?
Neither is Perforce, neither is ClearCase. Clear, whatever it is.
So let me address the last one first. I mean, you know, all I can say is I'm sorry. It took way longer than we thought, and we started out with essentially it was almost open source. You got the source code and yada, 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 and we had yada, yada, and we had to back off. And it's way too expensive and hard to do this, and we've built a pretty large company to do it, and our estimate, just remember this one, we figure there's about a decade more work in BitKeeper wall clock time before we're done. And I mean, like, I can see that much work ahead of us that I know our customers want already today. And every time you make problems go away, it's sort of like the chip guys call it the long pole in the tent, right? You make this long path go away, and now all of a sudden there's this other long path over here. And, you know, the manager doesn't care that last week you made this one go away. Now it's, you know, what have you done for any lady? Make this one go away. So we can see about a decade's worth of work. You know, there wasn't any way we were going to do this as open source. What?
Pound on it and make sure the mic's working.
I think the question was, does having Linus using BitKeeper make us more money? Is that the? It certainly gets us a lot more shit on /dot.
Well.
All I can say about that is there's very little money that we can directly trace or even sort of indirectly trace to, you know, because the Linux guys are using it, people are buying it. We certainly have gotten a bunch of, as our marketing guy said, we just hired a marketing guy, he said, that's probably the most expensive free marketing I have ever seen.
We're gonna go on to the next.
Yeah.
You get some more comments, so we want to go on to the next question.
Before you go on, it's hard to understand how configurations are enabling until you use them. Branches in CVS just don't work, and people avoid them like the plague. Now, I knew CVS branches were busted, and I'm sure you might say similar things, so I'm gonna, and we had this Eros tree that had 10 years of commit history, okay? We converted a repository that had 15,000 changes in it, and we were really proud of ourselves, okay? But we've never gone near the CVS branch feature because we knew it was busted, okay? And then Todd Tries of the OpenBSD team came along and asked me, right, what ought to, on the face of it, had been a really simple question. He said, do you have a conversion tool? The answer was sure. We moved 15,000 commits out of CVS into OpenSea, right? And then Todd explained to me that they had used the -B option. And I told him, Todd, you're screwed. The problem is not that we don't have a conversion tool. The problem is CVS doesn't know what it did, so there's no way a conversion tool can figure it out. We can apply heuristics.
Right. Yeah, same thing with Subversion. We have a converter tool. Right now, it just does the main trunk. Yeah, it goes branch. It totally ignores it. Totally ignores it. But 30 seconds on the question. Why do you see all of this in the last year? Well, it's not because of BitKeeper and the Linux kernel. I mean, both Subversion and OpenCM started several years ago, before Linus ever started using BitKeeper.
Okay, I was just wondering if you could make some comments about WebDAV. Do you think WebDAV is going to make a difference for developers? Is it going to be something important, or is it just yet another protocol?
Oh, yeah, WebDAV is great. The other guys on the team were very sort of suspicious about using it. Yeah, Larry's laughing over here. Anyway, they were suspicious about using it, and when we first sort of got the system up, and the guy mounted a Subversion repository using web folders, and just started browsing through the repository, he was like, okay, I'm bought. I'm totally in. I mean, you can take Mac OS or Windows XP, both of those you can actually mount a web dev server. You can mount a Subversion server, and you can actually browse through the files, look at them. We added an auto-versioning capability a couple months ago, so you can actually drag and drop files into the Subversion repository. I mean, we're talking about Mr. Idiot Office, Microsoft Office user. He can directly
open... He's doing source code control. What a scary thought.
No, but he's not. But
We have 5 minutes.
But this is what I'm talking about is he types in a URL that refers to a Subversion repository. He opens up that Word document, he edits the thing, and he saves it back, and it just works. And so the techie guy goes, oh yeah, you know, you deleted all those paragraphs. I can get them back for you because what you actually saved it to was a versioned repository. So because of WebDAV, we can actually handle very low-end users that don't even recognize that they're working with a Subversion repository.
So I'm going to give Larry the mic. I'm going to make this quick. So we looked at WebDAV and we started doing OpenCM. I was actually vaguely hopeful that maybe somebody had solved the problem and I didn't have to build a CM system. And so I talked to the people at IBM who were actually involved in creating WebDAV. What I learned was not only did they not know what the solutions were for doing CM kinds of things, they didn't know what the questions were. WebDAV pretty much encapsulates all of the wrong behavior of earlier systems. And the features that you're talking about, I think, are tremendous. But WebDAV is not the right way to underpin them.
I think we should probably get off this one. My only comment is we see no commercial demand for WebDAV at this time.
Next question. I have actually switched over to using Subversion for the repository control system for my open source project. My conversion largely involved checking out every checkpoint along the way and checking it into Subversion.
Can you bring the mic closer?
Okay. My recent experience has been an attempt to use authentication. There are certain parts of my project that I wouldn't like other people to see just yet. And I tried to do some fairly sophisticated authentication and access restriction controls with it, and I wasn't able to do it. And part of what I ended up having to deal with is some very odd disconnects between the way things are fetched out of WebDAV and the way WebDAV works and the way Subversion works. I actually don't, it seems to me like Subversion has taken the features of WebDAV and used them sort of until Subversion could like replace them with something that worked.
The WebDAV Delta V protocol defines a specific model, and so Subversion maps its operations onto that model. The thing is, the Apache authorization system doesn't directly address things of that model, specifically being able to access a specific resource through multiple URLs. And so when you try and lock down a specific section, you actually have to lock down all the different paths to the same underlying data. And that's really kind of the problem. We'll get it addressed at some point, but right now the answer for Subversion is you protect a whole repository at a time. This is basically on par with CVS's functionality. What people do with CVS is they go and they write a whole bunch of extra scripts to do it. The analog would be writing a whole bunch of extra stuff for Apache to do it. It's just somebody has not written that yet. It's not written that yet. There are a couple pre-commit hooks so that when you actually go to do the final commit, it will pop it back at you. And we do have those scripts, but it comes a little later than we would actually like in some cases. But
okay. With Perforce as a baseline for comparison, specifically the Perforce graphical user interface, could each of you speak to the prospects for ease of use in your system?
Quickly.
I think he actually already did. You know, as much as we sit up here and laugh at WebDAV, the features that he's talking about are probably the best ease of use features that any of us have, right? In terms of, I got idiot users, they want to drag and drop. We don't want those users. Give them the Subversion.
idiot users with checks.
But, so it really, I mean, it really depends on what your market are. We tend to veer away from the ease of use customers, right? There's people who call up and they say, you know, do you have a GUI where I never hit the command line? And we start thinking about how to get rid of them. Or they call up and they say, can we script your product? And we start thinking about how much money we're going to get from, right? It's sort of, we are more at the power end of the spectrum. We've got lots of graphical tools for solving hard problems. You want a three-way file merge? Man, we got the best in the business. But you want, you know, an integrated Windows Explorer, yada, yada, yada. We don't really do that.
Oh. We want to get moving here because we're about to have to wrap up.
Okay, so OpenCM is still young. We haven't done a graphical interface yet. It's a client-server system with a well-defined protocol, and we're actually looking at doing a graphical front-end. The drag-and-drop thing we're just not interested in, and we're not going to touch. The scripting is actually really interesting because there's a set of people on the high end who want to integrate development process controls with their CM system so they can do things like, you know, make sure stuff works or make sure tests happen. The catch with that is that each individual player has a different process they want to do. So you can't build it into the tool. Oh. What you've got to build in is scripting. The scripting is going to run potentially hostile code on a client system on a control, and we think we can get all of that right. That's hard.
Okay, quickly, Greg, because we want to get...
Subversion doesn't have a GUI. We're concentrating on a command line. However, Subversion is organized as a set of libraries, and so there's actually a client library that does all the interactions. And the command line is actually just a thin layer. So people are using this to create different GUIs. Those are all in progress. There is a Tortoise SVN, for example, and several other ones. But our libraries give us a scriptability. We actually have Python bindings for all of the different libraries in the system.
Okay. So let's say that I've got a project that's sitting in CVS right now, and I decide to migrate to your tool.
try it out and decide that I made the wrong decision, I want to go to something else. How screwed am I if I want to try and pull all of that versioning information out and migrate it into something else?
None of us are really going to have an answer because ours is... Because, you know, the thing is, we want people into our tool, so, you know, okay, he's shaking his head. Subversion has not concentrated on export, if you will.
Okay, look, where did the errors happen? Okay, there are two places where you could have errors. You could have errors on the inbound conversion tool. If there's an error there, you're going to get it back out faithfully, and it's going to be just as wrong as the conversion tool brought it in. The other possible source of error is, can you reconstruct the sequence of events so that you have a hope of exporting them and re-importing them? All these systems ought to be able to.
So it's sort of a question of, you know, how much lock-in is your question, right? Yeah. So
you mean there's no standard for format for diff logs so I can just export it from one to the other, or God forbid, write my own so there's four chairs next year or five or whatever?
So BitKeeper, we've... At least in our stuff, we make it policy that anything you put in, you can get out. There's an unvk command that converts all the files to straight SCCS, so you don't even have to convert them. But you don't even need to use that. We can export any change set as a patch. Every single piece of metadata that exists in a BitKeeper repository can be gotten at from the command line in a one-line command. There is nothing hidden. We put that into our commercial contracts. Until the lawyers got me, we used to put into our commercial contract that if you hit a 1-1 bug and we didn't fix it, we would come to your site and remove the stuff from our system and put it into the system of your choice at our expense. The lawyers wouldn't let me leave that in as we got bigger, but no way will we lock you in.
The version has a data export also, but it's, you know, raw data. We don't have tools to say move it into CVS again. That's kind of what I was getting at.
There was one more question. The person's decided they were... Ah, here you are. This is the last question.
All right, just one comment and one question. The comment is SSH is actually really flexible. You can run it as a normal user even. You can have multiple SSHDs for each individual user. And then inside that user context, you go ahead and you have it get access to the repository. And by Larry's nodding, I see he's figured this out just nicely. Yeah, SSH, very flexible. The question I wanted to ask you. I'll accept that file merges, in fact, can be, you know, multiple people can work on the same file. I don't think I can accept that multiple people should be able to work on the same function. At some level, don't all code bases break down into some kind of atomic unit that should ideally be lockable? Like, what you don't want is a situation of multiple people adding, you know, variables or adding internal code, and then it attempts to auto-merge, and you have no individual person who knows what the combined merge is.
So in our source base and in the source base of virtually 100% of our customers, what you just described as shouldn't happen happens every day, and it works. And it is profoundly central to their business, because basically the difference that you need to understand is, in the open source world, there is frequently a guy or woman who understands a particular chunk of code. And anything that happens in that space, that person does it in the pit. In the professional world, in the commercial world, there are many people. There is a rule, right? You know, one of our customers has a bus rule. The bus rule is anybody should be able to get hit by a bus and nobody notices. That means by definition, there always has to be two people that understand every single variable, every single line of code, every single function. You always overlap. And that is just different from the open source world. The assumption there is, well, there'll be another guy who'll come along and pick it up. But in the commercial world, if somebody, you know, somebody gets sick, they go away, there better be somebody else who can fix the bug when GM calls, because they bought 5,000 seats and they're about to kick you a new one.
Okay, so 1 minute wrap up each person, unless you want to, you're still finishing this question.
So locking is a form of policy. And what may work for your work process may not work for somebody else's process. It's kind of like open source licenses. The fundamental advantage of open source licenses is... You don't have to be locked in because you're in control. And the same issue arises in CM systems.
1 minute. Wrap up. You're done?
I'm done.
You're speechless. Ooh. I'm told I should record this moment. And then he's speechless too. Wow. Got both of them.
I think technically we've got three systems here that are really quite good. I think there's something, one thing that's going to be, frankly, a little confrontational that I want to say because I think it needs to be said. The OpenCM effort will never threaten to revoke your license. It will never threaten to pull a running system. It will never put you in a position where your daily operations are threatened.
Ouch. So, Subversion has been solid for a long time. If you are interested in getting away from CVS, I mean, CVS does handle almost everyone's day-to-day needs, although every now and then you run into its problems. And people know what to do to get around that, but they just kind of deal. The thing is, once you actually have the flexibility to, say, move a file, rename a directory, delete a directory, things like that.
Programmers deleting directories. This sounds like a good feature.
Well, in CVS, you kind of tiptoe around your directory structure. You go, damn, this just doesn't work, but you deal with it. And so with a tool that can actually do these kinds of changes, it just feels a lot better. You don't have to live with something like CVS. It works. But it'll get you here and there. I mean, really, try out a new system. You know, any of the three, although you got to pay him. But OpenCM and Subversion, they're and it's true. He's looking for a larger customer than most of us would want to do.
We have a dual licensing model that we call, the free version is called open logging, and what it does is if your check-in comments are publicly logged, you can use it for free. And if you're not developing, you can't use it for free if you're developing a competing CM system, right?
Use your system to maintain CVS and start shipping it?
No, you cannot. You could buy seats, though. We'd be happy to work out a deal.
All right.
Now I'm speechless.
All right. I think we're done. Thank you very much for your time here. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot to all three of you for coming down. We tried to get somebody from CVS here, but I think they're hiding. I want to mention again, the tickets for the dinner tomorrow night are on sale for the next 15 minutes only. We may have some left over tomorrow, but if you want to seat at the table for Mitch Kapoor's talk, for the trivia contest, for the giveaways from Google, No Starch, please get your tickets tonight. That, I think, concludes the first day of CodeCon. Thank you all for coming out. See you tomorrow at noon.